Welcome to Steelers Wire, Steelers 360. I am your host, Patrick Gellish, with my new co-host, Bubba Brewer. And we are talking about the Steelers with Week 12 coming up. Bubba, do you want to talk a little bit about yourself? Welcome to the podcast, by the way.
Well, thank you, Pat. It's an honor to be on your podcast. And ladies and gentlemen, let me introduce myself. I'm Bubba Brewer from an hour away from Pittsburgh, Indiana, Pennsylvania. I've been a lifelong Steelers fan all my life. So I'm here to test my knowledge and help this podcast, you know, gain greater heights. But I like to, you know, just say I'm very thankful that I got to be this co-host this year.
All right, great. And just for the fan base, who's your favorite Steeler of all time? I actually don't know the answer to this question. So,
well, my favorite Steeler of all time, it's hard, but I'm going to go with Jack Lambert.
Jack Lambert, the enforcer of the Steel Curtain. Can't go wrong there. All right.
No.
So, first up, we have the little fallout from the scuffle last week. Miles Garrett felt obligated to say that Mason Rudolph was calling him some racial slurs during the game, and that's what caused Garrett to lose his cool and basically attack Mason Rudolph with Mason's helmet. Rudolph has vehemently denied this. The NFL has said there's no facts supporting, there's no information supporting that Rudolph said anything to that extent, and so let's not kick a dead horse. And that's
honestly, Patty had also his team, the Steelers, backed Mason Rudolph, his teammates backed him wholeheartedly and said he didn't say that. So, you know, he got Cam Hayward actually spoke, he said he didn't say that, so he got the leader of the defense, you know, so the team is behind him 150%.
Yep, absolutely. And also, coming out of that fallout, Pouncey did try to talk to the NFL about his suspension, and his suspension was appealed and lowered from 3 games to 2 games, which means...
Yeah, I just seen that today.
Yep. Which means, conveniently, he won't be playing against Cleveland. Surprise, surprise. But he will be back for the late season push, hopefully playoff push, if we can get back on track and start winning games.
Very true.
And also, you know, so let's go into this week's injuries. Obviously, the big one is... Well, the big two will be James Conner and Mason Rudolph. The two quote-unquote stars of this offense are not going to be playing.
You have two Pro Bowlers out.
Yep.
You know, every game is a big game, so we need everybody, all hands on deck.
And really, you know, let's be honest, with this offense has not been... you know, what anyone, it's no one's proud of this offensive output. No one's writing home saying, wow, did you see those Steelers offense? Now, the defense is a whole different thing. The offense, you know, as Juju said himself, and I'm paraphrasing, he is no Antonio Brown. And while James Conner is his own running back, I worry, one, you know, I don't know the exact statistic, but there's something about James Conner's lack of 20-yard
durability.
Runs. Yeah, well, durability, that's the other thing, is his durability.
Yeah.
He's not that holds him back from being a bell cow, don't you think? I mean, if you're not a bell cow if you're not suited up.
Right.
So you're not.
He actually has more broken tackles this year. He had, I believe, 5 broken tackles this year, so he's not doing a lot of that. He's just not getting, I don't think he's hitting the hole right anyway, and him not being 100% has a lot to do with it. So hopefully we can get him back in the lineup as quick as possible, but at 100%.
That's true. And you know what? You know, this game does feel like a trap game a little bit against Cincinnati. They haven't won yet. We have two Pro Bowlers out. We, you know, have a Pouncey out. Well, really, we have three Pro Bowlers out if you look at the suspension as well. We are getting Foster back. Snell is going to be back in a limited role, I believe. And
yes.
And I really, really, I want to talk about, touch on Snell a little bit more. And Edmonds will be back. And I do like Edmonds in certain situations. I think that he's someone that, without Connor in there, that should probably get a few more touches than he does.
He brings a little power. Do you think he brings a little power when he runs the ball?
You know,
urgency, I believe, sometimes.
Yeah. You know, so as the scouting side of me, if you want me to break down Edmonds, he runs with great pad level. His pads are always in front of him. He runs like a dump truck. You know, he's always and he reminds me, and he doesn't have great speed. He doesn't use his hands in a stiff arm role as much as a Benny Snell does. He runs behind his shoulder pads and uses his leverage, and I don't believe he's that tall, very tall, but you know, he wins the leverage battle, and he runs hard, and he knows what he is. He doesn't get to the second level and start making all kinds of goofy cuts, which Jalen Samuels does, and I want to touch on that in a second. But Edmund stays north and south, stays behind his pads, stays low to the ground, and gets you 4 or 6 yards. Now, are you going to see 25-yard runs from him? Probably not.
No. But that one he did was 40, I believe.
Yeah.
30 or 40. He's always running. When he runs, Pat, he's. I think when he gets touched the ball, his intensity is trying to get that yardage because, you know, he doesn't feel, since the injuries, he probably could be not a real, be on a team longer when everybody gets healthy too, so he's trying to keep a spot.
Well, yeah, definitely there's something to be said for, you know, when you are a third stringer, fourth stringer, practice squad guy, you're trying to make, and that's actually what I like about him is, you know, he only has 5, 7, 10 carries to prove what he can do, and some people try to do too much in that position, but Edmonds has stayed true to what got him to the NFL, which is running behind his pads into the small creases and up the middle and making safeties pay for hitting him.
Well, there you go. I mean, just if he gets that short yardage when we need him, and if he can produce during that, that always looks good, you know, for him later on.
Yep. And actually, Edmonds is exceptionally good, not exceptionally, but above average good as a receiver. He actually has a better receiving grade this year per Pro Football Focus than Jalen Samuels. And so he's pretty sure-handed. He's pretty sure-handed. He knows, you know, like I said, you know, they're not going to put him on a fly route or whatever. But I wouldn't mind seeing a couple screen passes to Edmonds, make a couple of DBs try to tackle him out in space.
Well, they need to use that, but they haven't used that at all this year. They just use him as primary a running back. So if they can get him a little bit of, you know, he can get a couple screen, at least a screen pass, which they haven't even used in a great time that I can recall.
No, they've been very very hesitant to implement the screens, especially both to wide receivers or running backs. And I think that probably has to do with Mason Rudolph's athleticism and accuracy. He doesn't show good touch.
Talk a little bit about.
Yeah, he doesn't show good touch on the soft throws, the short throws. Last week, was it, yeah, last last week on third and long. Samuels ran a route into the flat. It was third and 12, and he checked down to Samuels in the flat and threw a pass 3 yards over his head.
He did that a couple times at Horton, too. So
yeah.
His accuracy is not, as you want to talk about Mason in this show, you know how he's not doing what he needs to do because he's just, that last week's game was not good at all.
Yep, we'll get to Mason Rudolph. We have, obviously, everyone wants to hear about him, and we have a lot of info to give the viewers. But let's go through. So we have our injuries. We have, basically the stars not playing for the Pro Bowlers, not playing.
And Dante Johnson is actually practicing. So even if he had that stuff out of his ear, he was practicing this week. So maybe he'll be in limited plays come this Sunday.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure if he's in or out of the protocol yet, but he was a full participant, or at least a partial participant, in practice this week. One last thing I wanted to say about Edmonds, I'm sorry I'm bouncing around here, is as good as he is as a running back and as a receiver out of the backfield, he is a major liability as a pass blocker, which is something that comes with being a third stringer. You know, he's not getting the reps and the reads that Connor and Samuels get. So, he's one of the lowest rated pass blockers in the NFL at the moment of people that qualify.
And being a Steeler running back, you have to be a pass blocker. You have to be when you're running in that offense. You have to be. That's a part of the asset of being a Steeler running back, so you can actually pass block.
Yep. He actually reminds me of a young Bam Morris. Remember Bam Morris?
I remember Bam Morris well.
Yeah, I think
he can run.
both Snell and Edmonds have a little Bam in them. If they if they project the best they could be would be a Bam Morris. You know, they're both young, and Snell likewise is a liability in pass blocking. But I like Snell for a whole different set of reasons than Edmonds. And if I had to pick three offensive players that had to carry the load this Sunday against Cincinnati, or step up, I would have Snell, Washington. Well, outside of Mason Rudolph, who obviously has to pick up.
Obviously, yeah.
Yeah. I would have Snell, Washington, and this is kind of a coin flip, Samuels in the running game or Vance McDonald in general. Who would you?
All four of them. Me, I would have the same probably, and I would go with Snell, Washington, which Washington and Mason should be doing a little bit better since they played in college together. They're former teammates. They should be. Washington should be just his primary guy anyway, because they should have a rapport. And then I'll go with McDonald because a tight end in the Steelers needs to be very vital in the offense.
Yeah, I mean, it's surprising because I was never too high on Jesse James when he was with the Steelers. Penn State product, solid, soft hands, great in the run blocking game, and when he left for Detroit, I did not think much of it, but our tight end room has suffered greatly, and I know they acquired Nick Vinette and that he has done some things positively, especially in the run game, but
run blocking, yeah.
Neither McDonald nor Vinette have done well. I don't know if they're considering Gentry a bust or maybe, kind of like redshirting him this year. They've, kept him. He's active, but they've kept him from, seeing any prolific time on the field. And I think the most telling thing, we're kind of dancing all over the place, but the most telling thing about our tight ends is we have to use Zach Banner as one of our tight ends because our tight ends can't be tight ends.
And the quarterback, when Mason throws the ball, he's not accurate enough to get it to the tight ends when they are open.
Yep.
So the ball's like low or it's too high.
Or behind them. Just, how about behind? How many times have you seen him throw behind someone?
Too many to mention.
Yeah.
Too many to mention. So that's probably another reason, too. So without the accuracy, and because the tight ends are very valuable at the Steelers, you know what I mean? Especially when they made that trade, you know, especially run blocking. But still, Zach McDonald, the biggest yard he had was in Tampa Bay where he was running like a rhino, and now he just doesn't catch the ball. And sometimes it touches his hands and he drops it. Just not good.
So Vance McDonald last year, 14% drop rate, which is by far the highest of any tight end in the NFL. I don't know what his percentage drop rate is this year, but, you know, he's never been known for his hands. Yeah, he's never been known for his hands. If anything, you know, if there's a thing to be liked about McDonald, it's his athleticism and his ability to make a play after the catch if he makes the catch, which is exactly what we saw last year against the Buccaneers when he had the famous stiff arm long touchdown.
He was durable.
Yep.
Last year was more durable. Like, he's always good for a couple games and he gets hurt, he gets nicked up, but he's not durable either.
Yep.
So we need a tight end that's durable that can actually catch the ball and block, and it's going to be hard. Maybe he'll have to get somebody in the draft or somebody signed in the offseason.
Well, you know, knock on wood, hopefully Gentry bulks up and is able to assert himself in the run blocking game, because, you know, Gentry has the size and length to be a Jesse James as a receiver. He's actually bigger than Jesse was. Gentry, I think, was 6'7" in the draft. You know, he was a big guy. But,
right.
Yeah, you know, let's not worry
target.
About the
tight end. 6'7" is a big target.
Yep, and with Mason missing high, Gentry would be the guy to go up and get him. So back to this coming game on the Bengals side, AJ Green will not be making his debut.
Thank God.
It's not AJ Green and Andy Dalton, you know, and this is a rookie now. They are starting Finley again this week against us. You know, I would love to have Andy Dalton taking snaps for the Steelers right now, just compared to how Rudolph has played of late.
Wouldn't be worrying about a wild card if we had him.
Yeah, exactly. Let's see, who else? Was there someone else? Oh, John Ross III has still... You know, he's on IR with a designation to return. He is not coming back this week. And I'm sorry, who is the offensive lineman for the Bengals?
The offensive lineman is Billy Price. He was in limited action, but we want him to start.
Yeah, Billy Price has one of the worst offensive line grades in the NFL. And again, per Pro Football Focus, I'll just say PFF for short. And he would be going up against Cam Hayward, who has one of the highest grades in the NFL. So that's a matchup we love on paper.
That's what we want Sunday.
Yep, absolutely. And also, Darquez Dennard, their first-round pick DB, was on the injured list, I think, but he was just out for a maintenance day, I believe. Did not practice because of a maintenance day.
Yes, him and Geno Atkins was.
Okay. And Geno Atkins, ironically, you know, I've actually touched on this matchup before, and one of the matchups that I've always liked in these divisional rivalry games between Pittsburgh and Cincinnati is DeCastro versus Atkins. And, you know, the whole offensive line has regressed as a run-blocking unit this year with Munchak gone. Across the board, there's not really one offensive lineman that has been the dominant force in the run blocking game that we are used to seeing. Different reasons could be one's the loss of a Hall of Fame coach, some guys, like, I think probably Pouncey's getting old too. Foster's definitely getting old. You know, the both
They're all
tackles, yeah.
in their late 30s. Yeah.
Yeah. We're one of the oldest lines in the NFL, probably. Don't quote me on that. I don't have the numbers, but I wouldn't be surprised because a lot of people don't play 12 seasons, which I believe Foster's in his 12th season right now. And, you know, there's a lot of work to be done. But that being said, if there is a team that the Steelers can run the ball on, it has to be the Bengals. I mean, the Bengals are 0-11 for a reason. They're poor on every level of the defensive.
Every category that you have in front of you.
Go ahead. What are some of the defensive rankings? Were they?
They were the 28th in defensive ranking.
And how bad are they against the run?
I believe they were 30th, I believe. I could be wrong on that.
Let's see. Thirty-second in yards surrendered against the run, so last in the league. 31st in touchdowns against the run. 30th in yards per attempt. So they, you know, pretty much the bottom of the barrel in the NFL. You
But
know.
also too, we're at the bottom of the barrels of run offense too, our
Yeah,
rushing.
yeah.
So it'll be the contender for the bottom of the barrel of who
Yeah.
actually gets a little more.
Yeah. But at least, you know, I'm gonna play devil's advocate here and say excuse me. I'm going to say that at least we have some of the components on paper to look like we could put together a running game. I know it hasn't materialized much this year, but if there is a time, it's now, and if there's a team, it's Cincinnati. That being said, you know, I hope that I think one of the issues, and it wasn't really as much of an issue last season when Samuels gashed, was it the Raiders or the Patriots? I think both of those teams Samuels had significant rushing yards against.
Samuels against the Patriots, Pat had 140 yards, you know, in that game, you know, so, and it was just a different, it was a different offense then. So it was a different dynamic, and he's not running as crisp as he did against the Patriots that day. And the Patriots had a good defense when we played them last year.
Correct. And one thing I want to say that really shows up with Samuels on film is you can tell that he was an H-back in college. You can tell that he was not a full-time running back by the decisions he makes as a running back with the ball. Because, you know, I've seen a few different plays where he's made some head-scratching cuts. One in particular that sticks out to me, I believe it was second and long, and we ran a draw play to, this was just last week, we ran a draw play to Samuels, and he got to the second level, and both linemen got up and blocked the outside linebacker and the safety. And all he had to do was get out, you know, put his head forward and get behind those blocks, and it would have gotten the first down, or, you know, he could have broke a tackle and made a big play. And he cut outside and walked out of bounds instead of he didn't even try to make impact contact with another
He just did the
player.
hole.
Well, he was already through the hole. This is on the second level
Yeah,
now.
I mean, and sometimes he just runs the. I just sometimes he just break a line. He's already done as soon as he hits the line. He just there's no,
Yep,
you
that's.
know. I think he's better at the receiving out of the backfield than he is running the ball.
Yep, it's absolutely right. And even as a receiver, now I think part of this is Mason's fault, Rudolph's fault, is he doesn't catch the ball in time. You know, like he has to his, you know, he has to turn around and catch it, or he's catching it on his back. He's not catching it in rhythm. Yeah, in stride. There you go.
Nope.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's, and that would help out if he would, because sometimes when it's third and four, you know, I mean, we'd have first downs, but then we're not getting them.
Absolutely. I was looking at this and I wanted to drop this on you. Now that, okay, we're going to transition. So, yes, he does have his problems, but, you know, the guy at the controls of this offense is Mason Rudolph. And this is just to give you an idea of Rudolph's production as a receiver. As a quarterback to the receivers that are going to be around Sunday. To the right, behind the line of scrimmage on the year,
okay,
he's 5 of 6. So he's completed 5 passes on 6 attempts for only 13 yards.
Oh, geez.
So that's like 2.2 yards per attempt.
Well, I believe when he does his short passes like last week, Cleveland actually shut it down, and even the Rams did the week before.
Both. Now I knew
they.
Go ahead. Yeah. Go ahead. Say what you're gonna say.
No, I was just gonna say that they both defenses in the last 2 weeks have shut down Mason's short game, because they know it's coming, because that's all he's doing is the short passes, you know what I mean? Because they don't have anybody to go along, so that's why, and he's not accurate, and they're shutting it down. It's like last week, for instance, he threw 44 times last week.
Yeah,
I mean, I know we don't have a running game, but you don't need to be throwing 44 times.
Yeah, absolutely absurd. And so his QB rating is 79.2. And, you know, that 5 of 6 behind the line of scrimmage, that's mostly checkdowns. You know, like we said, they're not running screens. And, you know, between 0 and 10 yards outside the right hash mark, he's 9 for 11 for 74 yards. 2 touchdowns, no interceptions, and his passer rating is actually 134.3, which is very productive, but surprisingly, only 11 passes outside the right hash mark. Now,
yeah, very surprising.
That, what that says to me is not a lot of trust in receivers, maybe some bad play calling, bad reads.
A lot of bad scratching. Everything. Like.
Yeah, bad in general. Now, throwing to his left side, kind of like the right side, he's 8 for 9 for 23 yards and 1 touchdown, which I believe was the pass last week to Samuel that Samuel ran. You know, he threw it into Samuel in the flat and he ran it in. And,
right.
But 8 completions, only 23 yards. And now the touchdown actually boosts his QB rating, so it's 116.2. But 8 completions for 23 yards, again, that's, you know, under 3 yards per completion. Which, you throw in the penalties, that's just a stagnant offense.
Very stagnant. Those 2 pass interferences that got that ball down.
Oh, yeah. Three penalties. Was it 3 or 4? 3 or 4 penalties on that drive. That was the ref's
drive. I think it was 3.
Yeah, I mean, and they weren't false start. They were, you know, big pass interference penalties. Now, the one thing that, so, in looking at the chart of Mason Rudolph's passing, you know, one in throwing between 10 to 20 yards outside the right hash, he is 1 for 4, 17 yards, 2 interceptions. with a QB rating of 5. That's his rating, 5.
Okay.
So I can understand, as I guarantee you, if I'm looking at this, that someone in the Steelers organization is as well, and they're saying, you know what, Mason can't throw downfield. Even over the middle, 12 for 27, 2 TDs and 4 interceptions. Now, granted, we have to acknowledge
the whole dynamics of the offense.
Well, yeah, the drops that have been interceptions, the drops that have turned into interceptions, whether it's been through Juju's hands, Dante Moncrief, who's no longer with the team, who else? I mean, McDonald, you name it.
Washington.
A lot of those, yeah,
Washington.
Yeah,
everybody.
Yeah, everyone has. What is surprising and, makes me wonder if they need to attack downfield a little bit more is not necessarily the 10 to 20 yard throws, which honestly, that's where most throws should be. You know, you should be attacking down the field to move the chains. You know, that's not a bomb. It's not over 20 yards, just 10 yards, a 10 yard out, you know, a post, a corner. All of those routes go into that 10 to 20 yard range. And then slants, crossing routes, screens, etc., go from 0 to 10 yards. But Rudolph has had some success, ironically, throwing to his left side, which, might just be luck, might just be the way the stats have shaken out. But
in college, he had a strong arm. I mean, he can throw, you know, a little further and, a long pass. He has it. He just, it's just not accurate enough, as we've seen last week and we've seen the weeks before. And the guys aren't catching, the receivers aren't catching the balls when it hits square in the hands. That is a detriment to the team.
Yep, absolutely. And the last thing that I want to say about Rudolph is, just from a scouting perspective, you know, and I've mentioned this to a few people that I talk football with, you know, the Steelers took Mason Rudolph in the 3rd round. He's 6'5", 235, ran a 4.9. And, you know, scouts have said, you know, when we drafted Mason Rudolph, if you're 6'5", 235, and have all of the tangible and intangibles to play quarterback, you're not a 3rd round pick. You're a 1st round pick. You're Ben Roethlisberger, Carson Wentz, even Blake Bortles, who didn't pan out. You know, you're a big guy that can stand in the pocket and throw the ball. And the Steelers are smart. They know we need these bigger quarterbacks because we have...
Can he really stand in the pocket, Pat? Because when he's in the pocket, he doesn't have that mobility and the flow behind his offensive line to actually, you know, it just doesn't have that it tangible thing when he's in the pocket floating around like that and actually making that.
No, I feel Mason can't. I feel Mason is poor in the pocket, but I see what they were looking at, because being an outdoor team with an outdoor stadium where it gets cold in December, you need a bigger guy to throw a heavier football at the end of the season. You know, Mason Rudolph did fit that bill, but if he had all of the metrics that everyone's looking for in a quarterback, he wouldn't have been sitting there in the 3rd round. Yep. And that being said, I think last week's game against the Browns with Baker Mayfield on the other side, not that Baker Mayfield is a great quarterback in the NFL at this point, but the difference in their ability to feel the pressure around them.
And he's a lot mobile.
Yep.
Very mobile.
And able to break the pocket, evade pressure within the pocket, step up, slide, you know, Mason has like concrete feet where they just don't, he doesn't keep them moving. He doesn't
He's not
reset.
nimble.
Yeah, not nimble. There's very little agility. And, you know, I'd bet you a dollar that in a 7-on-7 drill where there's no pass rush and receivers can get wide open, Mason Rudolph looks pretty good. But Sundays are very far from 7-on-7. And
Last Sunday was not, it was not that day.
yeah, especially last Sunday, you know, the offensive line honestly was just, this is the first time since New England in week one where the offensive line was getting beat regularly at the line of scrimmage pass blocking. Now, the run blocking we already talked about, but the pass blocking was abysmal last Thursday, and Mason Rudolph was one of the people that obviously suffered the worst because he's the guy they're protecting. Here are some stats to chew on about Mason Rudolph. When he is not under pressure, he has a 72% completion rate for 1,300 yards, 7.8 yards per attempt, 11 touchdowns, and 4 interceptions. It's not too bad.
And I'm going to say that he's under pressure. It dropped probably 45%.
Oh, hey, we're getting there. Hold on. I do want to also say that the receivers, when Mason Rudolph has not been under pressure, have dropped 11 passes for him, which is absurd. You know, they're.
I think this year, 2019, is the most dropped passes I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, and really unforced drop passes, I think, is the, you know, what makes it more frustrating as a fan. And then also, out of those 167 attempts where he hasn't been under pressure, Mason Rudolph has scrambled a total of 5 times. In contrast, under pressure, he only has 34 completions and 80 attempts. That's a 42.5 completion rate. His yards per attempt is 3.1, which again harkens back to all of the small passes near the line of scrimmage that are considered completions but are not going for very many yards. 1 touchdown under pressure. 4 interceptions. 13 times he's been sacked. 2 times the ball has been batted down. And his QBR is 33.9.
I was close.
Yeah, well, actually, you were very close. The total grade, his offensive grade under Pro Football Focus, is a 26% under pressure, compared to a 74 not under pressure. So basically 26%, to give you an idea, 50% is considered a backup, 40% is considered probably not going to be in the league, and Mason Rudolph when under pressure is at 26%. So they're now under pressure. That doesn't necessarily mean blitzed or not blitzed. That means he's pressured by the pass rush regardless. They do break down his stats, blitzed, not blitzed. They're underwhelming either way you look at it. But the bottom line is Mason Rudolph performs poorly when he has people in his face. And
Well,
I also, you know, I found it interesting that when he's under pressure, he's only scrambled twice, which is somewhat odd because you'd think a quarterback under pressure would scramble.
more than that, and
Yeah.
he would release it quicker, but he
Yeah.
holds onto the ball way too quick. He doesn't
Absolutely.
have a quick release, and that's why
Yeah.
I think a lot of it,
Yep, you nailed it. You know, if you're under pressure, you should be running for your life, not sitting back there holding the ball. And
like the ball, it should be out in like a second, like less than, if you're holding the ball for 4 seconds, you know you're in trouble. And he's not, he doesn't have the scrambling capability of Ben Roethlisberger, and he can't read, he can't check off as quickly. So, and he's not, he just doesn't have what the intel that he needs to be a quarterback who drives the offense down the length of the field if the 2 minutes are, you know what I mean? He doesn't have that intangible.
Oh, so, yeah. The summary of this conversation, you know, as we're bringing everyone back to our new podcast, is no matter what people are saying, at this point in time, Mason Rudolph is not playing like the future of the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Oh, I totally agree.
He was given 2019 as a season-long addition, and you know, the Steelers obviously don't have their first-round draft pick. And
but can we think of it this way, Pat? As if the line was blocking and everything was status quo, and we had James Conner and we had a receivers catching the ball, then if he's still at a lower average when you do your statistics and stuff, then they should take a look at that. You know what I mean? Like, I know everything on the offense is not status quo, but when it is status quo and everything's running at great cylinders and everything's fine, now if he has a lower, you know, quarterback rating with everybody there, then that's also, they know that it's not the future.
Yep.
That's just my opinion.
Yep, absolutely. You know, it's one of those things when the receivers are playing bad and the quarterback's playing bad, it's like, well, which came first, the chicken or the egg? Would the receivers play better if the quarterback was playing better, or would the quarterback play better if the receivers were playing? But, you know, it's like, who would elevate whose play? And, you know, as bad as Mason Rudolph has been, he's not the only one to blame in this offensive quagmire the Steelers find themselves in. And throughout 2019, they are the what overall offense?
They are actually the 30th. The 30th ranked offense.
They're the bottom of the barrel. And I would argue, we're going to get off the subject in a second, but I would argue outside of Washington and the Jets and let's see, Washington, the Jets, the Broncos, the Steelers have, you know, bottom five quarterback play. You know, besides those teams, the Steelers.
Well, the Steelers do not have they've never passed for 300 yards this year either.
Yeah, that does not surprise me. That's a great tidbit. You know, and there's been regression all along the offense. You know, and I think there's something to be said for losing three offensive positional coaches, O-line, receivers, running backs, you know, all changed. And we've regressed all across the board. So I don't think, as much as everyone likes to blame Tomlin, it's not totally Tomlin's fault.
Well, no, and you lose them coaches, plus you lose your Pro Bowl receiver from last year and a Pro Bowl quarterback, and you have James Conner, the Pro Bowl, not doing what he did last year. So there's a lot of dynamics that's not making his offense. This offense reminds me of the Joe Walton offense in the 80s, which is way worse now than it was back then. That's saying something.
And not to mention, now, the 2019 rules are built to produce offensive football, you know, and they weren't in the 80s as much. Yeah. You know, they're very touchy about pass interference, and, you know, defenses can't do as much as they could 30 years ago, and, right, or 40 years ago, whatever. And still, and it's, I'm not going to keep harping, but this has been the year of the backup. We've seen a lot of good backups come in and have success. So with that being said, I think the Steelers need to, you know, I don't know who it would be. You know, Teddy Bridgewater is going to be on the market. Cam Newton's going to be on the market. There's going to be a lot of people out there that are proven NFL commodities that, you know, after Ben has had his, after the, after the, you know, after he's had his comeback.
After he gets on, on his horse, because his comeback is coming. I do believe that. I do believe his comeback is coming.
And, you know, if we have a defense that's playing like this, who knows? You know, we can only speculate. But, you know.
And then we get, and then we get Stephon, we get Stephon Tuitt back next year.
Tuitt back.
Our injuries will be good.
Yep. Tuitt back. Edmonds and Fitzpatrick another year older and together. You know, they only have, you know, together they only have, what, two seasons accrued. You know, they're both from last season's draft.
Right. And whatever they do with Bud Dupree, if they sign him, if they don't, get another, you know, outside linebacker.
Bud Dupree, I think, has, I'm not a fan, but has earned a contract, I think. I mean, he's played well this offseason. This season he's played.
He's been impressive. It took him 4 years, you know.
Yeah, yeah. It's been impressive, but he's finally starting to look like a first-round draft pick. And Bud Dupree is actually a great segue into our last topic, which is this Sunday's game against the Bengals. You know, the Bengals don't have much. You know, I talked about McCoy versus DeCastro. They have a rookie under center. They don't have much on the offensive line. The price has been horrid on the offensive line for them, their left guard. Every one of – so Dupree, Hayward, Hargrave, and Watt all have very good pass rushing ratings, with Watt being the best pass rusher in the NFL with a 91% win rate.
Yeah, I've seen that. Yep, you're absolutely correct on that one.
And I think that, you know, I'm a big fan of Nelson. Without Green out there, it's going to be...
I am too, because you never hear of Nelson. That's why I'm a fan.
I actually saw an ESPN article that said Nelson was the most underrated player on the Steelers, which is something I actually agree with.
But with, in a long time.
Yep. Without Green out there, without Andy Dalton out there, Finley's going to be hopefully under fire. The front four that I just mentioned did not get home against the Browns when the Browns...
Just one sack.
Yeah, and the Browns... Well, you said one sack, right?
One sack, yeah. And I think, Pat, the biggest thing from last week, from the prior weeks, is the Steelers got turnovers and scored. We didn't get that last week, and I think if we would have had some kind of turnover and we could have scored, it could have been change of dynamics for that whole game last week. But this week, if they can get a big play like that, you know, it could be a low scoring. It could be low scoring, but hopefully, you know, it carries us to victory.
Well, there you go. That was the Browns game last week. Was the first time that we lost the turnover battle since week 3 against San Francisco, which goes to show you just how impressive the defense has actually been. But we'll have Nelson and Hayden on Boyd. Hayden again playing against Cincinnati, which he has his whole career, being that he's been an AFC North DB, you know, Browns, Steelers. You know, he's had a lot of games.
He'll be using their tight end too, Tyler Eifert. You know what I mean?
Tyler Eifert.
They need to stop the tight end, because the tight end's always been the Steelers' defense Achilles' heel, in my opinion.
So
if you stop them and the running game with Mixon.
Yeah, Joe Mixon. You know, Mixon has seen an uptick in carries the last 2 weeks with Finley under center, which makes sense given that Finley.
But he plays good. He plays good against the Steelers, though.
He does.
He has a better game against the Steelers than other teams that he plays against.
I think one thing, you know, and this is, I understand kind of wanting to do the running back by committee thing, and if they feel Giovanni Bernard is a weapon, that they need to deploy him. But I feel like sometimes the Bengals in the past have taken Mixon out when, for Bernard, when Mixon was hot. And, you know, he's one of those running backs that gains momentum as, you know, the game goes on. Yeah, absolutely. And so they take him out for Giovanni Bernard, and Mixon ends up back at zero, but cooled off by the time he's back in the game. And with that being said, really, if they want to use Bernard, they should kind of use him how the Browns used Hunt last week. You know, give him, you know, line him up kind of like a receiver, motion him out of the backfield, give him,
use him on third down.
Yep. Use him as a third down back.
Yep.
Don't take and away
Hunt,
from.
Eifert getting touchdowns galore.
Yep. And Eifert, you know, is always dangerous. We were talking about this earlier. If you were going to attack this defense, obviously the front four is playing at an elite level. The secondary has been solid with Minka Fitzpatrick, you know, carrying the load back there, putting a top on the defense, so there's not a lot of deep plays to be had. Nelson's been solid in man coverage. I like the substituting of Sutton on third down for Hilton at times, because Sutton's a better coverage guy. Hayden is old but steady. So the people you want to attack are the inside linebackers, which is ironic because, you know, I always think of the
one's inexperienced and one is not playing his position the way he should be.
Yep.
So that's probably the weak link of our defense right now would be the middle linebackers.
Yep. And I don't know if you know this, that Devin Bush last week was the first time all season that Bush did not finish either first or second on the team in tackles. So that was, by Bush's standards, kind of a, you know, not his best game. You know,
well, but, it was definitely Barron's worst game.
Yeah, Barron had a bad game. I mean, the game against the Seahawks strikes me as one that was extremely poor as well. I know he got beat twice by their tight end for two touchdowns.
But do you think that with Butch is more, the more experience he gets, the plays that it cost him last week, he would actually overcome and actually shut those plays down, the more experience that he gets, because he's still a little bit, since he is a rookie, those are rookie mistakes, you know, like last week against Cleveland.
So, now, absolutely, Bush is a rookie. He's made rookie mistakes. One example that's a perfect example is against the Colts. He bit on a Doyle head fake, and Doyle went right inside of him for a post route. Easy touchdown. Just a rookie mistake. You know, he got too excited and bit on the head fake. And, you know, it's just something
that happens to the best of them. Yeah.
Now, we're at the point in the season where Bush has played a lot. Let me see how many snaps Bush is at. 598 snaps on the season. So
that's definitely a lot for a rookie.
Yeah. And, you know, to give you, Terrell Edmonds is at 691. So, that, you know, but also Edmonds and the secondary guys are not hitting every play. You know, Bush, 598 snaps, and he's had a blocker or two in his face for every one of them. So at what point do you have to worry about Bush and the rookie wall? Which is something that I do worry about with him a little bit. you know, it is
amazing. But you know, Vince Williams comes in a little bit, but he's not coming in a lot to give those guys a little bit. That's all we have, because the second tier of linebackers and the linebackers to me are not, it's not worth putting them in. Like, they're more special team players in my eyes.
Exactly. So Matakevich, Spillane, who was a practice squad guy, those are the other two active inside backers. Vince Williams has done great, and I hope that he sees more snaps. He's only played 223 snaps, kind of rotating with Barron at that position. But he's been great as a run defender his whole career, not just this season. But he's really come on. Go ahead.
And I'm going to say he has, and then with Chickalo, he doesn't even need to. He hasn't produced at all. So I just keep, you know, Vince Williams in there as the second gear for run stopping.
Yeah, Chickalo is actually outside with Skipper and, what is it, Adeniyi? Yeah, Adeniyi. I can't say it. So, yeah.
The concussion.
It would be Matakevich would be next guy in, I think. And Matakevich has played 16 snaps on the defense this year. So, but, you know, Vince Williams probably has the freshest legs of the group. You know, there's two ways of thinking about it. There's one way you could say, well, Bush is young. He can handle the workload. But I do think there's something to be said for the rookie wall. You know, he's never played this level of competition, and he's never played a
full season,
you know, a season that's this long. And so while his, you know, also he's a playmaker like Ryan Shazier was, but Ryan Shazier literally had elite line or wide receiver speed. So Shazier was a menace in coverage. You know, I forget how many interceptions he had, but his interception per drop back rate was through the roof. And Bush is kind of a, you know, rally to the ball, make the tackle, solid tackler type of guy. He is fast, but he's not the fastest, which
not
is what... Yeah, not Shazier fast, exactly. And Shazier was also, what was it, his third year, I believe, when he got hurt? Or fourth year? You know, he was also developed a couple years into his career. And
right.
So, you know, asking Bush to be the anchor in the middle of this defense as a rookie, you know, he's
asking a lot.
Asking a lot. So
and Shazier Pat had a lot of growing pains too, you know, first couple of seasons too.
He did. And he had, I'm trying to think who was with him. Was he there for James Ferrier's last year?
I'm not sure offhand.
Definitely Vince Williams was there. So he was definitely playing with Vince. I'm scratching my head. I'm drawing a blank. But, you know, Shazier, you know, had developed quickly. And it's becoming a speed game. And Shazier was a speed backer. So, yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing Vince Williams and Barron on the field together and giving Bush a little bit of a rest. Like I said, last week was his worst game. That being said, speaking of rests, you know, since it was a Thursday night game, this is a long week for the Steelers. You know, they've had a couple of
days. They needed that long week, though, too.
Yep. It's probably, knock on wood, it's probably going to let Johnson be healthy enough to play. And that being said, you know, if the defense kind of returns to form, and I don't see a reason why they wouldn't against a lowly Cincinnati team. I think this is a trap game. I honestly do. Because Mason Rudolph you know, like I said, I gave you guys the numbers under pressure, is not just bad, he's abysmal. I mean, it's hard to watch. It's hard to watch. And I dug into the numbers to just provide the evidence of, you know, how bad he really, really can be when he is forced to make throws.
He's not going to try to punt for touchdowns. We're going to have to just on the leg of Boswell and the defense will actually, you know what I mean? I just can't see Mason driving the offense down the length of the field and putting it in the end zone. It's going to be Boswell's leg kicking field goals. I don't think we're going to break. I think he's going to kick more field goals in this game than he probably will all season.
That's an interesting point. And, you know, we also don't have Ben Roethlisberger's awesome record against Ohio football teams that he has carried throughout his career, you know, in our corner. This game is in Cincinnati, and, you know...
Well, Pittsburgh is, and since 2010, 17-3, if that means anything. And I know you're a stat guy. If that means anything, that's a good stat to have.
Yep, 17-3, and I would presume maybe only a couple of those losses, one maybe, were with Ben, and I guarantee you everything else was with backup quarterbacks in situations where he's injured. But Rudolph, like I said, you know, 50% coefficient by Pro Football Focus would be his, you know, an F grade essentially. And in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, in 8 games, he's had a 49 or lower. And, out of the 8 games he played, I'm sorry, out of the 8 games he's played, half of them have been a 49 or lower. And 2 have been below 40 into the 30s, which is absolutely the bottom of the barrel.
And what scares me, Pat, is if he throws more attempts Sunday's game than he did last week at 44, if he gets those high attempts, that means there's no running game and it's we're in dire need. But he doesn't need to be throwing those. He doesn't need to throw in 44, 50 attempts. There's no, you know, that's too high. He's not that good of a quarterback to do that.
Yep. You know, I think if the Steelers have between 220 and 260 passing yards, that's about the formula I'm looking here. You know, we had 229 against Cincinnati last time, 251 against Miami, 242 against LA, 221 against Cleveland.
And no turnovers.
Yeah.
That yardage you just said, and no turnovers, would be a better statistic, because that would give us probably more of advantage to come out of Cincy with a win if he doesn't give up the ball. If he gives up the ball with a couple turnovers or fumbles the ball, then this game could be a trap game, like you said.
Yep. So how do you see this game going?
I see it low scoring. And I hate to say this because our offense is very, very putrid, but I do see the Steelers winning. Because, well, Pat, I am a diehard and I always take Pittsburgh, but it's going to be low scoring. I think it's going to be probably 17-10, maybe 20. It's going to be a lot of Boswell kicks. I don't think we're going to get the end zone maybe one time. And hopefully the defense can have a turnover because they didn't have one last week. So maybe they can score one this week, because I have a funny feeling they probably will. But our defense will actually score something and maybe get one score to the offense with a lot of field goals. So 20-10, 23-10, Pittsburgh.
Yeah, so the offensive line has given up, or Mason's taken 10 sacks in the last 4 games, with 4 of them coming against Cleveland. So there's definitely been a spike in whether it's him holding the ball or the pass protection.
Well, two was Myles Garrett, which we're not playing this week, and we're not going to play him the rest of the season. So, I mean, he was that good last week.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, touchdowns on 11. Bamalele gave up them 2 sacks.
He's one of the best edge rushers in the game at this point in, you know, his career. Young, athletic, you know, strong, obviously. Strong enough to rip someone's helmet off. And not just a little guy, you know, Mason Rudolph, 6'5" himself. So that says something. I will say, like you, I doubt that with a rookie and second-year quarterback on the field and one elite defense that there's going to be much of a shootout in Cincinnati. And I would not be surprised if, you know, the offense has gotten at least one touchdown, I believe. Yeah, in every game, Rudolph has managed to score one passing touchdown all year. I think that trend continues. Now, whether or not the defense scores a touchdown is what I am interested to see. That being said, I think the Steelers end up with a 18-15 game.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, I think there's one touchdown and a whole bunch of field goals followed. And I think Cincinnati gets a two touchdowns and a 1 2-point conversion, which would give them 15. So that is my prediction for this coming week. Another thing, we don't have time this week, but another thing I would like to talk about, and maybe we'll touch on next week, is... Oh, actually, we do have another thing we were going to talk about this week. I wanted you to discuss the playoff picture.
Well, the wild card scenario right now.
Yeah,
the Steelers are in the AFC. We're in the eighth seed. We're in the eighth seed in the AFC, Pat. And there's a lot of games this week that could move us up a little bit more. I mean, losing that game against Cleveland, you know, of course, didn't help our cause. But the Jacksonville Jaguars, you know, have to play the Titans, and we need the Jaguars to win. And the Raiders, you know, last week they barely beat Cincinnati. But we also need the Jets to beat the Raiders, which it might be done because the Raiders are hot and cold, in my opinion.
Do you know where that game is? Is that game in New York?
No, I'm not sure offhand. If it's in New York, it'd be a little different. If it's in L.A., you know, Oakland, it'll definitely be probably the Raiders. But hopefully, I mean, this whole scenario, I can't see every team that I'm picking that we need to win actually win. But it's that's why we're here. You know, and the Broncos, you know, the Bills are hot right now. And the Broncos, you know, hopefully beat the Bills. And then the Thursday night game is Texans versus the Colts, and we need the Texans. They're both 6-4, but we need the Texans to win due to the Colts, to us beating the Colts in a tiebreaker if we get to where we need to be in the middle of December going for the wild cards.
And
so all these scenarios produce, then we have a little bit of better, but we have to handle our own business, as always.
Yeah, all of this is based on the Steelers winning the games we're supposed to win.
Right.
And all of those games are important because most likely there's going to be a tiebreaker scenario at 10-6, 9-7 for that last wild card seed. And the tiebreaker, when there's multiple teams that haven't, or teams that haven't played head to head, is in conference record. So having teams like the Raiders, the Titans, the Colts lose in conference only bolsters our chances at winning the tiebreaker, which we do have actually right now. We would have the tiebreaker over the Titans because we do have a better record in the AFC. But just as important is the Steelers beating Cincinnati, because not only are they a division opponent,
it all starts there.
They're a conference opponent too, so that'll go towards our conference record. So, you know, we have the Bengals coming up, the Browns, and the Jets on the roster, on the schedule. And the Steelers need to
take
them.
Buffalo.
Yeah.
And Buffalo, and yeah. So this last month's going to be very interesting. See where we go, and hopefully the offense can get on, maybe on 3 out of 4 cylinders, and get us, hobble us into a wild card spot.
Yeah, and that Buffalo game will be huge.
Big game.
In deciding, you know, because Buffalo being in that AFC East, I know it's, well, basically 2 losses to New England, but it's 4 wins essentially with the Jets and the Dolphins, you know, which are bottom dwellers in the league. You know, anybody.
I think they were actually an interception away from beating the Patriots this year in Buffalo.
They were a pump block. The
Patriots. They had their quarterback, Josh Allen, went out. They had the second string quarterback in. He threw a pick or something, I believe correctly. I could be wrong.
I think they.
But it was a close game.
The Patriots blocked a punt. The Patriots blocked a punt.
So, that Buffalo game with Pittsburgh is going to be very huge.
Isn't that? I'm pretty sure. Isn't that what happened? The Patriots blocked a punt.
I'm not sure. But I just know they knocked out Josh Allen. They had brought their second string quarterback in, and he did something, you know, he messed something up. It was like real close. It was like 17-14 or something like that. That was like the second or third week of the season. But
yeah.
I'm not holding my breath against the Jets either, though. But Levy, you know, we're going to see Levy on, so, you know what I mean? That could be, hopefully it's not his best game of the year.
Yeah, it was 16-10, and Buffalo had 4 turnovers. They hung 375 yards on that New England defense and had 23 first downs, but, you know, the turnovers just couldn't.
Every time.
Yeah, you said it correctly. Their backup, Matt Barkley, threw an interception with 1:27 left. And
okay, because I believe, yeah, they were driving. Yep.
That is how that goes. And so Buffalo, you know, I mean, it's just so twisted because Buffalo and Pittsburgh both have losses now to Cleveland. And if Cleveland gets into things, you know, they can just make the situation even more complicated. But
it could be even more perky. Yeah.
The outside of the Ravens game, which, I mean, the Ravens look exceptionally good the last couple of weeks. Yeah, I didn't want to say unstoppable because they are the Ravens.
Well, I don't like the Ravens either, but it is what it is.
Yeah. They do look tough. The only game that Vegas has the Steelers not favored to win is actually at Arizona. And, you know, if there's a game that we had to lose, Arizona being in the NFC would be it. But Arizona has found many ways to clutch defeat from the jaws of victory, let me tell you. I mean, they had that tie against Detroit. Last week they were up by 17 against San Francisco. You know, they have a great rookie quarterback in Kyler Murray, but they haven't figured out rookie coach, rookie quarterback. They haven't quite figured out how to win in the NFL. So,
well, hopefully they don't do that against us.
Yeah.
So hopefully their pattern is continuing when they play us in the next couple weeks.
Absolutely. That game is December 8th. And I wanted to thank everyone for listening to Steelers 360 podcast. And we will talk to you guys next week after the Bengals game. This is Patrick Gellish signing off. Bubba, you want to say anything?
Like I said, Pat, it's an honor to the show, and welcome everybody for listening. Go Steelers.